Right now, at this very second, the world's smartest investors are quietly borrowing about $1.8 trillion in short-term cash.
Yeah, that's a staggering number.
It really is. And they're doing this just to bet on, like, fractions of a percent in the bond market, which, you know, if they are wrong by even a millimeter, it could trigger this massive global financial pileup.
It's a totally different reality when you look at the raw mechanics of these markets. I mean, we spend so much time looking at the surface.
Yeah, right. Like which billionaire bought what stock or the retail hype you see on social media.
Exactly. But down in the engine room, institutional funds aren't really guessing if the market goes up or down. They are exploiting these tiny structural cracks in the system. Things like dispersion, financing pressures, and convexity.
I want to stop you right there. Just kind of decode that last term for the listener. Convexity. Mm-hmm. It sounds intimidating, but it basically means finding an investment where the upside payout grows like exponentially faster than the downside risk.
That's spot on.
It's like buying a highly calculated lottery ticket where the worst you do is lose a dollar. But if the market moves your way, the payout just rapidly accelerates.
Yeah, that is a great way to visualize it. Finding that asymmetric payout is pretty much the entire goal of the institutional machinery.
And mapping out that machinery mm-hmm. is our mission for today's deep dive. So we are looking at a highly detailed, honestly incredibly dense, global macro and prime brokerage research briefing.
Oh, it's dense, all right.
Yeah, it's titled Wall Street Hedge Fund Industry, Current Concerns and Investment Themes as of 2026. It was prepared on June 22, 2026 by the American newspaper and American TV.
What makes this document so valuable is that it really steps away from the daily noise. It gives us this blueprint of the 2026 hedge fund alpha engine.
Right. It shows us how all these massive tectonic plates, I mean, the Federal Reserve, artificial intelligence, private credit, global currency wars, how they're just constantly grinding against each other.
It's all connected. You really can't look at one without the other.
Okay, let's unpack this. And let's start with the loudest, heaviest plate in the entire machine, which is AI. We need to clear up a misconception right away. If you're thinking this is still the 2023 playbook of just, you know, throwing money at every tech stock with AI in its press release, the 2026 trade is completely different.
Well, it's completely evolved. We can see that shift in the data from Goldman Sachs Prime Services. They report that hedge fund technology exposure is hovering near record levels.
But they're doing something else too, right?
Yeah, they're simultaneously seeing heavy profit-taking in semiconductors. The easy money on the chips themselves has already been made.
So the trade has matured.
Right. It's gone from a momentum bet into this massive capital expenditure puzzle.
A physical puzzle, really.
Yeah.
I was reading through this section, and it struck me that we talk about AI as if it lives in this magical cloud. But an AI model is intensely physical.
Very physical.
It requires gigawatts of electricity, massive cooling systems, specialized industrial transformers, and like thousands of miles of copper wire.
And that physical bottleneck is exactly where the hedge funds are hunting for that dispersion we mentioned earlier.
Dispersion meaning they aren't just betting the whole sector goes up?
Exactly. They are aggressively playing the winners against the losers. So funds are going long on the cash flow winners.
Meaning the company's actually making money right now.
Right. The company is making the unglamorous physical infrastructure, the power grid equipment, the liquid cooling servers. They're the ones generating real revenue from AI today.
While simultaneously betting against the losers, the report mentions they're shorting overpromised AI beneficiaries, specifically legacy software vendors.
Yeah, and the mechanism there makes total sense if you think about it. Older software companies charge a subscription fee per employee seat.
Right.
But if an AI agent can do the work of 10 junior employees, mm-hmm. you just don't need those 10 software seats anymore. The legacy revenue model simply collapses.
That's wild, but it makes perfect sense. And the briefing flags a massive macroeconomic risk coming out of that exact mechanism, which is AI-driven deflation in white-collar services.
This is a huge concern. If companies are using AI to replace highly paid analytical or administrative roles, those salaries vanish from the economy.
Creating a deflationary drag.
Exactly, a drag on the services sector, which violently clashes with the inflation of building all these multi-billion dollar data centers. The ultimate question the market is asking in 2026 is, well, it's a race against time.
Can AI actually generate enough real-world revenue to pay off these massive infrastructure loans?
Right, before credit and equity investors just lose their patience.
Let me isolate a paradox in that Goldman data, though. You mentioned tech exposure is at record highs, but the report also says these hedge funds' net leverage, meaning their overall directional bet on the market going up or down, is relatively flat.
Yeah, it looks confusing at first glance.
If they are holding a record amount of tech, but their net bet is zero, how are they mechanically structuring this?
So they are using immense amounts of leverage to inflate the size of their gross positions. Think of it this way. A fund might buy $2 billion of that data center cooling company and simultaneously short $2 billion of a legacy software company.
Okay, so their net market exposure is zero.
Right. If the whole stock market crashes, the short position balances out the long position. But their gross exposure, the actual size of the assets they are managing on their balance sheet, is $4 billion.
Wow. But to finance a $4 billion balance sheet, you need to borrow cash, like a lot of cash. Which brings us to the fuel and the friction of this Wall Street engine, which is the Federal Reserve and interest rates.
Right, the era of 0% money is dead.
Very dead.
Yeah.
As of June 17, 2026, the Fed held its target interest rates at 3.50% to 3.75%.
And it's dead because inflation has proven to be incredibly resilient. The Bureau of Labor Statistics reported that May's consumer price index hit 4.2% year over year.
Which is high.
Yes. And on top of that, May payrolls were up 172,000. So you have a labor market that just refuses to cool down and inflation running hot. The Fed is boxed in. They have to keep rates high.
And this sticky inflation forces hedge funds to obsess over the yield curve. The report mentions they're heavily trading the 2S10s and 5/30s.
Right.
Just for the listener, that simply refers to the difference in interest rates between short-term government bonds, like the 2-year treasury, and long-term bonds, like the 10-year. Funds are betting on exactly when and how that curve will shift.
But to make those debts profitable, we have to talk about that $1.8 trillion figure you mentioned at the top of the show.
Yes, the repo market.
This is the most precarious gear in the machine. What's fascinating here is the Dallas Fed warned that by year-end 2025, hedge funds had amassed roughly $1.8 trillion in net repo borrowing, and that's primarily in treasury-related basis trades.
I want to break down how this physically works because, repo borrowing sounds so abstract. Let's use an analogy. It basically sounds like a high-end pawn shop.
A pawn shop's a perfect way to look at it.
Right, so if a hedge fund spots a tiny fraction of a percent difference between the price of a physical treasury bond and a futures contract, they want to capture it. But a fraction of a percent pays nothing.
Barely anything.
So they buy a $100 government bond, they walk into the repo market, our pawn shop, hand over the bond as collateral, and get $99 in cash.
And then what do they do?
They take that $99, buy another bond, and immediately pawn it again. They repeat this like 50 times. Their actual cash is tiny, but they control a massive mountain of bonds.
The pawn shop analogy is mechanically spot on. The repo market allows them to use the same collateral over and over to multiply their buying power. But here is the danger. Interest rates are the literal physical cost of doing business in that pawn shop.
Right.
The rate they pay to borrow that cash overnight is tied directly to the Federal Reserve.
So what happens if the pawn shop suddenly gets nervous about that 4.2% inflation and demands more collateral?
Yeah. You get systemic risk. If the cost of borrowing spikes unexpectedly, or the repo market demands a higher margin, the hedge funds don't just lose a little bit of profit, they face a margin call.
Ouch.
Yeah, they are forced to rapidly sell off their massive bond portfolios to raise cash. And when everyone tries to sell at the exact same moment, the bond market just seizes up.
Wait, hold on. I have to push back on this structure a little bit.
Yeah.
We've established that rates are sitting around 3.6%, right?
Yes.
That isn't cheap historically. So borrowing nearly $2 trillion to harvest tiny fractions of percent,
Yeah.
isn't that inherently reckless?
Yeah.
Why are regulators allowing it?
Well, the funds argue it isn't reckless because they are hedging their bets and providing necessary liquidity to the U.S. Treasury market. They genuinely believe their internal risk models are
Of
flawless.
course they do.
But the Dallas Fed's warning suggests regulators are getting extremely uncomfortable. When you have $1.8 trillion of pawn shop leverage in the system, a single miscalculation can cause a multi-car pileup.
But this $1.8 trillion in domestic leverage doesn't exist in a vacuum, right? Because the Fed is keeping rates high to fight inflation, it acts like a giant magnet for global capital.
Exactly.
Investors all over the world want that 3.6% yield. And to buy U.S. bonds, they have to buy U.S. dollars, which brings us to the global board and a supercharged greenback.
The dollar transmits U.S. monetary policy straight into the global economy. The briefing notes that on June 18th, 2026, the dollar index hit a one-year high, trading around 100.90.
Which is massive.
It is. This is being driven by the Fed, sure, but also by safe haven demand amid ongoing U.S.-Iran geopolitical talks.
And a strong dollar acts like a wrecking ball overseas. It crushes emerging markets that have to buy oil or service debt priced in dollars. But the report highlights a very specific precarious situation with the Japanese yen.
Ah, a carry trade.
Right. It warns about violent market reversals tied to the carry trade. Let's walk the listener through why Japan matters so much to Wall Street right now.
The Japanese carry trade is one of the oldest structural trades in modern finance. For years, interest rates in Japan have been incredibly low, effectively zero.
Okay.
So a hedge fund will borrow money in Japanese yen, where it costs them nothing. They take those yen, convert them into U.S. dollars, and buy U.S. Treasury bonds paying nearly 4%. They just sit back and pocket the difference.
It sounds like free money.
It is, until the exchange rate moves against you. The report warns that because the dollar has gotten so strong, the Japanese yen has collapsed in value.
Right.
If the Bank of Japan suddenly intervenes in the currency markets to prop up the yen, the value of the yen spikes. Suddenly, that hedge fund's Japanese loan is vastly more expensive to pay back.
Oh, wow.
The free money trade turns deeply negative overnight, forcing funds to sell off their U.S. assets to cover their Japanese debts. It causes a violent cross-asset crash.
It's all connected. And, you know, you mentioned geopolitics earlier, U.S.-Iran talks. Mm-hmm. That feeds directly into commodities. Mm-hmm. The Fed's own financial stability outreach cited geopolitical risk and oil shocks as top concerns. Because oil is a direct physical input into that sticky 4.2% inflation we are fighting.
Right. And the report is careful to point out that hedge funds do not just look at commodities as, like, spot prices flashing red or green on a screen. They look at the physical mechanics of the world. They are analyzing crack spreads.
Let's define crack spreads for the listener real quick.
Right.
That's essentially the profit margin a refinery makes by taking raw crude oil and cracking it into usable products like gasoline or diesel.
Exactly. Funds are watching those margins to gauge actual physical demand in the economy. They're also tracking maritime insurance premiums and physical bottlenecks.
Right, the shipping routes.
Yeah. If a geopolitical event in the Middle East forces shipping tankers to reroute around Africa, that spikes maritime insurance rates. That raises the price of imported goods, which feeds right back into the U.S. inflation data.
Which brings up a counterintuitive scenario from the research. We normally think of peace as unequivocally good news. But the report explicitly lists peace headlines and shipping normalization as major risks for these portfolios. How could a sudden ceasefire blow up a hedge fund?
Because of the risk premium. If a fund is heavily leveraged on the long side of a conflict, meaning they are betting that defense stocks will rise, oil prices will stay high, and shipping routes will remain disrupted, a sudden announcement of peace destroys their thesis.
It just wipes it out.
The risk premium evaporates instantly. Oil drops, shipping rates crash, defense stocks sell off. They call it a whipsaw, and it can be a catastrophic financial event for a fund positioned the wrong way.
So we've mapped out the massive gears of the public markets, the equities, the treasuries, the currencies, the physical commodities. But this briefing highlights a looming risk that is hidden entirely off the public exchanges.
Private credit.
Yes. The fourth major component of this engine, private credit.
This is where the regulators at the Financial Stability Board, the FSB, are genuinely alarmed. They estimate the private credit market has ballooned to somewhere between $1.5 trillion and $2 trillion.
That is a lot of money in the dark.
It is. Private credit is money being lent directly to corporations by private equity and hedge funds, bypassing traditional banks entirely.
And because it bypasses banks, it bypasses the sunlight. The vulnerabilities listed in the report are pretty stark. They list complex leverage, delayed loss recognition, and something called a payment-in-kind income illusion.
Yeah, that's a big one.
What's terrifying is that this market, at this $2 trillion scale, simply hasn't been stress-tested during a severe economic downturn.
The core danger here is valuation opacity. In the public markets, if a company reports terrible earnings, their stock price drops instantly. The market marks the value down in real time.
Right. Everybody sees it.
But in private credit, these loans aren't publicly traded. The funds holding the loans get to decide what they are worth, often relying on internal models or delayed appraisals.
So a company could be entirely failing to generate cash, but the private credit fund just hasn't written down the value of the loan yet. The losses are economically real, but they aren't reflected on the balance sheet.
Precisely.
And you mentioned the payment in kind or PIK illusion. This is fascinating. As I understand it, that is when a struggling company can't pay its cash interest, so the lender just adds the missed interest to the total principal of the loan.
That is exactly how it works. The fund gets to report on paper to its investors that the loan is generating income, but no actual cash changed hands. It is a phantom return.
Here's where it gets really interesting. I love the analogy we've used for this before. It's basically like refusing to check your credit card statement and legally being allowed to tell everyone you have zero debt simply because you haven't opened the envelope yet.
It's a perfect visualization. You are legally solvent on paper, but only because the envelope is sealed. But eventually the cash runs out, the business defaults. And when that dam breaks, the resulting forced selling is going to be vicious. That's why the report notes that patient distressed debt specialists, firms like Baupost or Elliott, are just waiting in the wings.
Like vultures waiting for the weak to stumble. They keep their powder dry, wait for the private credit funds to face redemptions, and then step in to buy those loans for 40 cents on the dollar.
Exactly.
Which brings us to the final piece of the 2026 puzzle. Who is actually navigating this minefield? Who is actively trading AI supply chains, 4.2% inflation, Japanese carry trades, and opaque private credit?
The pod shops.
Yes. The answer lies in how the hedge fund industry itself has evolved into massive industrialized pod shops.
The Lone Wolf hedge fund manager is mostly a relic at this point. According to hedge fund research, total industry capital hit a record $5.22 trillion in the first quarter of 2026.
Trillion with a T.
Yeah, and taking in $45 billion of new inflows in that quarter alone. Institutional capital is flooding into multi-strategy platforms, names like Citadel, Millennium, Point72.
And they are charging an absolute premium for it. The report notes fees are still averaging 1.33% for management and nearly 16% for performance.
The fees are hefty.
And their sheer scale is drawing attention, right?
Yay.
The SEC and CFTC are actively increasing their oversight. They're proposing to raise the Form PF reporting thresholds up to $10 billion for large advisors. They are desperately trying to monitor the systemic risk.
But the defining characteristic of these pod shops isn't just the sheer amount of money they manage, it's their ruthless operating model. The pod shop turns a single massive hedge fund into a portfolio of dozens or hundreds of small, strictly controlled internal funds.
The pods.
Right, the pods. Each pod has a specific mandate and incredibly strict risk limits. If a portfolio manager loses even 3% or 4%, their capital is cut instantly and their terminal is shut off.
Wow. And the briefing highlights that for these pods, AI is no longer just an investment theme, it is their operating system.
It's everywhere.
They're using AI to parse corporate earnings calls in milliseconds, to map global supply chains autonomously, to write complex trading code, and to run their daily risk dashboards.
Which introduces the ultimate paradox of AI in modern finance. Yes, AI drastically compresses the time it takes to conduct research. An AI agent can read every SEC filing from a company's history in like 3 seconds.
Right.
But because of that, it also compresses the alpha half-life.
The alpha half-life being the amount of time a piece of information gives you a profitable edge in the market.
Exactly. Because if every major pod shop is using similar highly advanced AI tools, they all receive the exact same summarized insights at the exact same speed. The window to act on a mispricing shrinks from days to minutes to absolute milliseconds.
But wait, if every pod shop at Millennium or Point72 has virtually unlimited computing budgets, and they are buying the exact same alternative credit card data sets and using the exact same AI architectures, doesn't the edge just disappear entirely? Doesn't the public market just become a giant, hyper-efficient tie?
That is the existential fear driving the industry in 2026. The report argues that the edge is no longer just having AI. The edge is combining AI with proprietary exclusive data that no one else can buy and utilizing human-in-the-loop workflows to catch the nuanced context the AI misses.
That makes sense.
But your pushback is totally valid. In the highly liquid public markets, true informational advantage is systematically being automated away.
So we've covered a staggering amount of ground today. To synthesize all of this, the report provides a practical daily checklist. If you want to track the world like a Wall Street podshop does in 2026, you can't just open a broker app and look at whether the S&P 500 is green or red.
No, that is retail thinking.
Right. To see the machinery, you have to look at the inputs. You watch the pre-market futures to gauge the overnight risk appetite. You wait for the 8:30 a.m. Eastern Time data drops, specifically things like PCE.
PCE being personal consumption expenditures, it's the Fed's absolute favorite inflation gauge because it tracks what people are actually spending out in the real economy.
Which instantly reprices the Fed's interest rate path.
Exactly. You also monitor the Fed window, specifically looking at SOFR rates.
Let's define SOFR real quick, the Secured Overnight Financing Rate. Mm-hmm. This is the literal heartbeat of that repo pawn shop we talked about earlier. It's the baseline cost for banks borrowing cash overnight. If SOFR spikes, you know the leverage in the system is under severe stress.
And finally, at the end of the day, you don't just look at closing stock prices, you look at options skew.
Right. Options skew measures fear versus greed. Tells you whether institutions are paying massive premiums for put options to protect themselves against a crash, or if they are buying call options to chase the market higher.
It shows you if the machine is rewarding risk-taking or scrambling for cover. It's entirely about reading the pressure gauges on the machine, not just looking at the speedometer.
Which brings us to one final, deeply provocative thought that this entire briefing points toward. We just discussed how AI is relentlessly compressing the alpha half-life in public equities. If AI completely democratizes all public market information, making it mathematically impossible to gain an informational edge in public stocks, will the only way to generate true market-beating returns in the future require taking on extreme illiquidity?
It's a chilling prospect. Will this technological arms race inadvertently force all the world's smart money completely out of the public light and into the dark, opaque, private credit markets?
Right.
The exact same markets that global regulators are currently terrified of because they literally cannot see inside them.
We started by looking at the institutional machinery of Wall Street. It turns out that engine is running hotter, heavier, and faster than ever, fueled by AI and record pawn shop leverage. And as the public roads become too crowded and too efficient to find an edge, that machine might just be driving itself straight into the dark. Thank you for joining us on this deep dive. Keep questioning the consensus, keep looking beneath the surface, and we'll see you next time.